Welcome back, podcast friends, to I Am Healthy and Fit. I'm Steve Jordan, your health and fitness coach. I Am Healthy and Fit feels great to say. Give it a go. Wherever you are, say it out loud. Close the door to your office or your room. Hear your voice. If you're in your car, shout it out. And notice how you feel immediately following saying this. You probably will feel a little lighter. You might even have to put a smile on your face. And my hope is that you're going to start feeling positive and maybe even a little healthier and fit. See, these aren't exaggerations. I've seen the magic of this mantra change people's lives before my very own eyes, as it did and it still does for me personally. If you are motivated to make your health and fitness change permanent today, then my prescription to you right now is to pause this audio and say, I am healthy and fit, out loud 10 times in a row with a strong voice. Be assertive and believe I am healthy and fit. And this will help transform your life forever. I'm excited about today's show because I've got an awesome guest, Neely Fisher, the flexible chef. She's keeping people healthy and fit worldwide in the kitchen and beyond. Enjoy the listen. Welcome, Neely, to the podcast. How are you feeling today?
Hi, Steve. Nice to meet you. I'm feeling great. How are you?
It's really great to connect with you again. The first time that I met you was about 3.5-4 years ago already, right? At the Rob Report Health and Wellness Summit in Park City, Utah.
That was so much fun. I can't believe it was that long ago. It's insane.
It flies. I know. Well, we had an amazing time, and I'm super excited to have you here on the podcast. You were at the top of my list of people to interview, and thank you for spending your time with me because I know you are a globetrotter. You're all over the place. And where are you right
now? I'm in Montana at a ranch.
Ooh. Yeah. They call that Big Sky, don't
and
they?
And let me tell you, when you walk outside and you look at the sky compared to my normal life in Hong Kong with the skyscrapers, you understand why it's called Big Sky, because you can see for miles. It's amazing.
Oh, that's so cool. Very cool. What are, do you look at the constellations? You get to see them there?
You know, it's been a weird summer, like kind of rainy and like stormy and very dramatic. So we haven't done a ton of night stars. By the way, it gets dark here at around 10 p.m. So I wake up at 5 to work out. I'm usually asleep before it gets dark, so I'm really not out when the stars come out.
Oh, that's so cool. I can't believe it gets dark at 10. I love it here when it's right now. It's like 8:30. It's starting to get dark, and it feels like the days go on forever. It feels great. So they call you the flexible chef, and you tell me a little bit about how and why you coined yourself the flexible chef. Where did that come from? And what does it mean?
Yeah. So I have been, I would say, more rigid and flexible for most of my growing up in adult life. I was kind of this type A personality that followed the rules and did everything. I kind of always did according to the book. And I call myself a recovering perfectionist. I always kind of had really high standards and very, very rigid rules that I imposed upon myself. And over the years, as I grew into a mom of four kids, I understood that the secret to sanity was to apply a dose of flexibility. And after years of both practicing and teaching yoga, I would say close to the last two decades or so, I started to understand the key role that flexibility played both in my body and in my life. And I had all these pretty illuminated understandings of how that even played into the food that I ate and the way that I fed the people around me. And, over the years, also watching the diet trends, and it's either this or that, and it's like, eat this, but don't eat that. And I kind of experimented with all of those things, from paleo to pescatarian to carrots only for the month to green juice for 7 days consecutively. And you know, I've come to a place in the middle in my own life where I can sort of zig and zag in between a little bit of indulgence in all areas and in the kitchen and some kind of regimented healthy habits where I've, you know, found this place where I think is a really aspirational and practical place to be. And so, you know, the Flexible Chef was born out of that philosophy.
I love it. I love it. No doubt that's exactly why we connected when we did, for even that short 3-4 days that we were there together. Everything that you said, I am in agreement with. There was some key words there that you even used that I had a smile from ear to ear. One is zig and zag. I tell my clients that all the time. You got to zig more than you zag, but you can't be so rigid and expect perfection. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people look at me and, you know, they're like, well, what do you eat? I'm like, I eat, you know, really good 90%, 95% of the time, but there are times I'll have a burger, have ice cream or even some French fries, you know, it's all good. And it feels good to be able to do that once in a while. Mm-hmm. So, I resonate with everything that you're saying there. Did you know that you were going to be a chef as a child?
So, you know, I always say that I started cooking in my mother's kitchen before I was tall enough to reach her countertops. And so I always had a passion for food. I loved not only food because I realized that it was like nourishing and it was actually kind of a skill of mine because I saw the art in food preparation, but I always loved feeding other people. Like remember when I was like, I don't know, probably 11 years old, I used to quote surprise, because it happened like once a week, I would surprise my parents with a Saturday afternoon spread, you know, salad bar and all these different things. And I always got a lot of satisfaction from feeding others. And so, yeah, I guess I've been doing the cooking a long time.
So cool. I know you have 4 kids. What are the names of your kids?
So my oldest is Ben. He is going to be 17, which is insane because I still feel like I'm 22. And then I have a 14-year-old Eitan, a 10-year-old daughter Ayla, and a 5-year-old Liam.
Okay, great. So you have 3 boys and 1 girl.
Yeah.
All right. So 3 boys, 1 girl. That's a busy household and a husband.
And correct. Husband.
So you've got 4 boys, 1 girl. Yeah. That's a busy household. How do you feed them all? How do you manage it all? What's the key you to be able to stay sane and keep everybody happy?
So I think that when we talk about flexibility as being the kind of secret ingredient for success, the thing that people don't initially understand is that the backbone of flexibility is organization. And you need to be able to be not only prepared with the usual that all of us know about, whether it's lists or calendars and itemized things and schedules and spreadsheets and all of that stuff, but it's also being organized with a mindset. And this only came to me probably recently, is this idea that, like, you have to kind of have a vision, I think, as the head of your household, whoever, you know, it could be the mom or the dad or the whoever, but whoever the head of the household, I think you have to have this kind of organized, like, big picture mindset of, like, where are we going with this? Like, what's the agenda here? What do we want out of this whole thing? Like, what kids do we want to raise? What kind of, you know, I'm looking at my 17-year-old, for example, like what food choices is he making now based on whatever we did like 10 years ago? So sort of like setting this kind of vision, I think is really, really important.
Neely, I think we're kindred spirits because, again, I feel so many similarities. I know that the listeners who have been hearing my podcast through the series have heard several things there. And what I say is you fail to plan, you plan to fail. Mm-hmm. And I heard you say that, not so many words, but you have to have a plan. Mm-hmm. You have to have organization. And then the other is you have to have a vision. And the I Am Healthy and Fit podcast is really, it's about a mantra. And it's the title of my book coming out in the fall. And I know you have one coming out too. And we're going to touch base on that a little bit later. But it's a mantra or an affirmation to be able to create change from the inside out. So it's a visualization, if you will. It's an action. And it feels like that sort of ties in how and the way that you organize your family as well, as far as eating is concerned. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Absolutely.
Very cool. So I got a couple of questions that are kind of personal here. What's your favorite food to eat?
Ooh, it's funny. I just recently posted on I have a private Facebook group. And I recently posted a few, I posted actually a recipe for cauliflower. It was like really simple. And I said, if you were on a desert island, what food would you take with you? I always like, I love that question. Like, if you could eat nothing else forever. And I'm sort of just like, I'm so boring. I'm really obsessed with like cauliflower and broccoli and cabbage. Mostly because I have ways to beef them up to taste like decadently amazing, whether it's with butter or, you know, roasted with Parmesan or crisped with, you know, some delicious olive oil. And that's kind of honestly, again, so boring, my favorite normal food to eat. But I do have a thing for chocolate and rosé, and I like to keep those pretty close.
Nice. I love it. My mouth is watering over here, and my hand is reaching for the wine, the rosé. I love it as well. What food do you like to cook?
You know, most of the time I gravitate towards the simple stuff that we want to eat every day, whether it's, you know, a seared salmon with a, you know, little sriracha, something or other with a salad, or a simple stir fry. I have a recipe, which I'm really excited about coming out in my book. One day my, because I live in Asia, I make a lot of stir fries and kind of, you know, one wok meals. And I couldn't use the gas stovetop and I needed to use the oven for dinner. So I came up with this oven stir fry that's like a sheet pan stir fry, chicken, broccoli, whatever. Honestly, it's like the most amazing thing. It tastes like you slaved all day making this succulent thing. And it's just one pan in the oven. So, you know, things that don't take a lot of time, but people say, wow, what is that? Like, how is that? You know, something simple that's just got a twist that makes it really special.
Do you have that recipe on the Flexible Chef website?
No, I do have, I have a recipe for a chicken and broccoli stir fry, which is my go-to, but the special one in the oven is going to be in the book.
Well, I know the listeners are going to know at the end of the interview where to find you.
Yes.
Get some of these amazing recipes that you've been working on. Your website is very elaborate and very well done, and it has a tremendous amount of information on there. It's invaluable. So I definitely encourage you all to go there. What is your favorite? What part of the day is your favorite? The breakfast, lunch?
I'm a breakfast girl.
Nice.
Dinner I could like sometimes even do without, which is lucky for me, I guess, because I mean, Steve, you're probably even more of a nutritional expert than me as far as this is concerned. And I do think that everybody works differently, like different bodies, different lives eat at different times differently. You know, my husband could eat at night and wake up in the morning and feel fine. I personally don't have a big dinner because I feel kind of heavy and bloated in the morning. But, you know, I think it is a lot of research has pointed to like eating more of your calories during the day, you know, the whole intermittent fasting thing, kind of ending your day early, eating a little bit later in the morning. That works for me.
Absolutely. I'm on that plan as well personally. And I promote that as well. Typically a 12-hour fast from your last meal to mm-hmm. your first meal. And I believe that breakfast also should be probably the biggest and most calorie rich meal of your day. You can't go on a trip with a half a tank of gas.
Correct.
So you gotta feed your metabolism and get things kickstarted in the right direction. And then in my experience and in what I've seen work with my clients is that they typically eat less later in the mm-hmm. day because they're not ravenous. They're not starving.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I'm also agreeing there. What's your favorite food when you're sick, Neely, if and when you ever are sick?
You know, my mom makes a pretty darn killer chicken soup that I also have the recipe in the book for with a couple different twists. And I always, this is where the organization comes in. I always have a little freezer container of it, not because I think I'm going to maybe get sick, because I just like to be organized with like a backup plan. And if I'm sick, I'll defrost some chicken soup because I'm not well enough to make it for myself. But that's my favorite thing.
I love that. I think that's so rich what you just said there about freezing the chicken soup or some other favorite meals that can be frozen. So you always have it on hand. And I mean, how long does it take to defrost and get that going?
So, you know, one of the things I love to do with soups, if you put it in one of these big Tupperwares, and I know the whole plastic thing, but I mean, you can't freeze the glass container. So I do have plastic containers that I freeze things in, but they take forever to defrost. So my secret for freezing things really well is I freeze them in Ziploc bags with like a little Sharpie with the date and what it is. And it freezes kind of flat, right? So it doesn't take up a lot of space in your freezer. And it defrosts much quicker because it's a little bit of a thinner, I guess, more compact liquid. So, it, you know, if you put it in a pot, it only takes about an hour.
Nice. What I do when I freeze things or unfreeze things, I run hot water over it, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, is that's a good way of doing that. Don't you? Do you
agree
with
you
that?
Can. I don't know. Like, I'm so not.
Just to the point of being able to get it out of the Tupperware. Right?
Oh, absolutely. Totally. Because it's like kind of release the freezer. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and then I would put it in the pot, and then I would, you know, burn it over the stove. I don't use microwaves, and I do believe that you definitely get some of the plastic
carcinogens
that could seep into the food. But I don't know about being in the freezer. I've never seen anything about that. I'm sure it's safe.
I get slammed for using Tupperware, but I'm like, okay, what else are you going to use? Like, what's your other option?
So, you know what? You're great in all area, every other area. When you're a leader, there's always going to be somebody throwing darts at you, trying to pick something out of what you're doing.
Exactly.
So I wouldn't worry too much about that. Does your husband cook?
You know, he always jokes that, okay, can we digress?
Yes, of course.
I have a funny story. So he always jokes that he never knew that I knew how to cook when we first got married. And on the I think it was the third night after our wedding, I said, honey, what do you want for dinner? And he's like, how about eggplant Parmesan? And I was like, okay, eggplant Parmesan. And so like I Google eggplant Parmesan. I'd actually never made it before. And I like, this was like pre my gluten-free days. I like fried up the eggplant and I made this like massive 9x13-inch eggplant Parmesan. And he kind of picks at it. He like takes a couple bites. And I was like, do you not like my eggplant Parmesan? And he was like, well, I mean, it's fine. I didn't know you actually knew how to cook. So I just thought about the most complicated thing I could tell you to try to make and see if you knew how to do it. Anyway, we had eggplant Parmesan in our freezer for about 18 months. I was like, you're going to eat this eggplant Parmesan. But
is he Italian? Is your husband Italian?
No.
Oh my God, that's so funny. I love eggplant Parmesan. I'm Italian of descent. My mom is over half Italian. My dad over half Italian. I grew up eating eggplant Parm, and man, it's so good. It brings me back. Actually, somebody asked me today. They knew that I was interviewing you, and they were throwing out a couple questions and interested in. And she had asked me if it was your last meal, which meal would you have? And I said, lasagna. I had to think about it. And I said, you know, because I don't really love, like, I love variety of foods, but there isn't like one thing that I'm like always gravitating towards. And I said, lasagna, because it would bring back the most memories of growing up. Mm-hmm. And that would be the reason why. Not because I love the taste of it. I do like it a lot, but it's more about the memories that it would create. If you had your last meal, you were on your deathbed or on being executed, what would be your last meal to choose?
Oh, I never thought about this. I love this question. Not that I want to copycat you, but I want to say pizza.
Nice.
I haven't eaten gluten full pizza in close to 12 years.
Good for you.
But I love pizza, and I do make variations of, you know, healthified versions, etc.
I have to get a recipe from you on that because I love pizza as well. And I'm gluten-free 90% of the time. You've been gluten-free for 12 years. Why did you choose to go gluten-free and how has it worked for you? Because I'm sure a lot of our listeners have questions about gluten. I always get that question all the time. Why and how has it worked? What has it done for you?
So I'll try to keep it brief because I could talk about this for an hour, but I went gluten-free before the trend of gluten-free happened. And like before you go to the supermarket and apples were labeled gluten-free. And I was living.
It's such a marketing gimmick now.
I know, right? I just had a baby and I was kind of struggling to lose my baby weight. And my oldest son, Ben, was having some like stomach issues that I won't get into here, but he, like, I was actually kind of health-wise, we were taking him for all these different tests. And anyway, so we kind of went to the doctor together because we were experiencing some similar symptoms. And she's like, you know, you guys should go gluten-free. I'm like, gluten what? And so, of course, began the education about what that meant. And at the time, I just bought some gluten-free cinnamon glazed donuts for my kids as a treat for the weekend, actually today, from this company called Katz. They're not sponsoring this, but they're actually delicious. Katz gluten-free. You guys should check them out. And if you're doing the treat, like the 10%.
Plug it.
Oh my God, I lost my train of thought. This is what happens when you have four kids and you're 40. What did I?
Or when you've eaten sugar, when you've had Cinnabons.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I haven't, but I will later today. I was telling you about gluten. So, gluten-free. Oh my God, where was I?
Why you started today? You went there and then you learned about this a long time ago and you've been doing it since your doctor told you to do this.
Right. Okay. So we'll get back to the, I forget why I told you about the cats thing, but all you listeners out there are like, I know where you were. I can tell you. Just message us. But anyway, yeah. So we went down this whole route. It was before, then here I was. It was before the days where you could buy this stuff. So if I wanted bread, I had to bake it. And if I wanted donuts, I had to fry them myself or bake them or whatever. And so we basically ate a really clean diet, which is how I think, you know, a lot of us feel good eating anyway. Lots of proteins, heavy on the vegetables, low on the carbs. We live in Asia, so rice is kind of, anyway, was a staple in my kids' diet. So, you know, rice and vegetables and proteins and fruit for dessert or something. You know what I mean? And we felt amazing. I lost weight immediately. My son's issues disappeared. I had all my kids tested because, well, later on when they all were born, because, you know, over time, I, you know, wanted to make sure that, like, I wasn't creating a problem. And none of us were celiac. And, you know, they say it's some sort of, what do they call it?
Intolerance.
Intolerance. I mean, it's such a silly word. It basically just means, like, I don't feel good when I eat pasta type of thing.
Exactly.
And it's funny because my husband loves pretzels and he should eat them because he's fine. He looks great. He has tons of energy. He runs marathons. He's super attentive. He's successful. Man, you should eat those pretzels if it works for you. If I eat pretzels or bagels, it just doesn't work for me. And I think the message here, again, this is like a much longer conversation, but I think the message is like, you know, everyone's got to figure out a way to eat for their body that makes sense for them, you know, with a little bit of education and a little trial and error. And figure it out for yourself. Don't follow what somebody else says is the best way.
I agree. You have to be aware. You have to be more mindful of what you, food can be a medicine or a poison. And, you know, why can some person have peanuts and eat all the peanuts in the world, but another one can have something that was made in a peanut factory and it touched the peanut and they go into anaphylactic shock, right? So not everybody is made equal and not all foods are equal, equally as good or bad for individuals. So you definitely have to pay attention to that. And there's one thing that I want to comment on. You said, you know, pay attention to your body. So many of us are not aware of our bodies and how it feels. What I like to tell my clients now is also pay attention to your minds, right? So your concentration is your your moods. Do you have a more even keel mood, or are you moody, or do you find yourself depressed? Because foods can have that type of effect on you as well. Have you seen that as well with your kids and with your clients?
Yeah. I mean, I would also say, and I think you're saying this, is that so much of how we eat is to feed our mind rather than our body, right?
Correct.
And how much of the foods that we kind of reach for because something else either is going on. And, you know, I've certainly been through periods of my life where I used food as a way to, you know, self-soothe or feel good, you know, the chocolate thing or whatever. And I think if you're aware of it, it's almost okay / better. Like, I'm feeling sad, I'm eating chocolate now versus, you know, 15 years later being like, why can't I lose 30 pounds? I think it's because I have, you know, I think it's because I'm sad or something, you know what I mean? So anyway.
Yeah. Great. What are the three most
going?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I definitely was going in that direction. I mean, I just think that sometimes people don't know their bodies, right? Because they've been so unhealthy and so unfit, and they're ashamed of it, and so they tune it out, and so they're not even sure how it makes their maybe low on energy, but that may be more of a feeling. But how does it, you know, also affect your mind? Is your focus better? Is your concentration better when you're eating healthier foods? Because when I eat bad, like I get kind of cranky, my energy's low, my focus isn't as good, I'm maybe less attentive, or maybe more. So those kinds of things we need to pay attention to as well.
Yeah, no, that's great. I totally agree.
What does healthy and fit mean to you?
I think my first instinct, I've never thought about it in that question way, but I think my first instinct is to say that it means me being my best self. Because when I feel not healthy and not fit, I'm just not my best awesome. Like I'm, you know, if I have to get in front of a room and give a, you know, yoga class or speak or anything, or walk into a meeting or show up at the dinner table with my husband, if I don't feel that, then I feel like I'm cheating myself out of my being my best self.
I love that. It's a great answer. When you're, what kind of practice do you get into? Is there a particular form of yoga? How long do you practice for? And what are some of the benefits that you see and feel?
So I've been practicing yoga for, like I said, close to about 2 decades. I've been teaching for I don't even remember, 13 or 14 years.
Cool.
And I've gone through periods. I think everyone can relate. When you have like a new obsession or a new hobby, you kind of do it a lot all the time. Nothing else is as great, right? So initially it was all the time, everywhere. Anytime I'd travel to a new city, I'd take the best teacher's classes, and I had a regular practice of at least 1.5 to 2 hours every day, at least 5 to 6 days a week. And that was great. And I was immersed and I learned, and it was the right thing then. And the right thing now is for me to do it a little differently. I have other things that I do. I run, I take bar classes. I have my own little weight training workout with my kind of my travel pack with my ankle weights from Tracy Anderson and kind of my other stuff basically. And so my yoga practice is, I don't know, I would say between 30 and 35 minutes a day. I have a kind of basic sequence of poses, some sun salutations, some hip openers. I try to get splits in just to keep my psoas and, you know, thighs kind of open from running. I do a handstand or an inversion almost every day. And, you know, every once in a while, if it's exciting, I'll go take a teacher's immersion class or do something bigger. But I've kind of made yoga fit into my life rather than turn my life around to fit into my yoga more often these days.
That's the key there. I love that. You've made it a lifestyle. That's huge, huge. Now, I was looking through your website and I saw a recent blog that you wrote, I think it was back in September, about how running taught you about your business. Can you comment a little bit about that?
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. I haven't read that in a while. Give me some of my – tell me what you loved about that.
Well, you know, I
– the goal setting.
The headline, and I just thought it was really cool because we have talked about running – with a couple of the other guests, and the listeners know that I like running and I'm into that. It's a prime. I'll comment on how running helps me, and then maybe it'll help you remember some of the comments that you had made in that article.
Go ahead.
It's challenging. Number one, right. It's tough to get out there and just like go, you know, just to put on your sneakers and be like, all right, this is going to be, you know, it's just different. It's out of the comfort zone. So the first thing is like, gets me out of my comfort zone. The second thing is it really teaches me how to be present. You have to be present mm-hmm. with your breath. You got to be present with your environment, especially if you're running in a city like LA, where you got to be dodging traffic and running over, jumping over curbs and potholes mm-hmm. and other types of people walking on the sidewalk. So it makes me present. And then breath work, like going to your yoga, it's really important that breath is so mile when I run. It's actually one of the practices I did when I was running a half marathon about 5 years ago, and it helped me to get through it, because when you're anxious or you're stressed and tense in your face, everything else in your body is going to be. So I found that smiling was really important. So it helps me to just enjoy the moment. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the benefits I get out of running.
That's awesome. By the way, we should talk about this separately. And any of you listening, if you've had any knee pain, could you message me? Because I've just recently started getting some pain. I'm like, oh no, what am I going to do? I better get flexible and try to vary it up a little bit. But anyway, listening to your body, this is an aside, but because I'm experiencing some pain right now, listening to your body and knowing when to stop is a random good message about running.
Absolutely. And I can definitely help you with that. We'll definitely
talk about
that.
That would be awesome. I would love that. I would love that. No, but I'm remembering the moment that I wrote this blog post. Thank you for giving me a second. And my treadmill, I was running on the treadmill because I was in Thailand, and it was actually my 40th birthday, and it was about 120 degrees outside. So anyway, my treadmill, I think, stopped in the middle, or I kind of lost my time. And I wasn't sure how long I ran for, and I wasn't sure how much longer I was going to go for. And the epitome about running for me at the time was that you really need to set an intention beforehand in order to set yourself up for success. Because otherwise, like you said, it's really hard. And 20 minutes in, and by the way, that 20-minute mark for me is where I can pivot either way. Like, once I pass the 20 minutes, I'm like, okay, I can keep going. But for how long? Like, it depends. I got to tell myself how long I'm in it for. Like, today I'm doing 6 miles. Now, if I have knee pain, I'll stop at 5. But if I just have like brain pain, I keep going. And mm-hmm. I remember that moment where the importance of setting a clear intention and a goal, and kind of this feeling of when you're in it. It's this feeling of being unstoppable, because you're like, it was hard. It was so hard. And I set this goal and I did it. Wow.
And you know what you just did there? You celebrated. That's something that I'm huge on with my clients, and in what we do, is we tend to forget to celebrate our victories, even the small ones, like just running like you did. Like, you were excited about it. I heard the enthusiasm and excitement in you. Mm-hmm. So keep you coming back. When we watch athletes on the screen right now, the World Cup's going on, and when they score a goal, the celebrations are magnificent.
Right.
When they do that, it brings such adulation. It makes them feel good, and everybody around them joins in on that and cheers them on and supports them. Mm-hmm. But once we get older, we forget that. And I think it's so important to get back to that celebration, even celebrating the small victories, because it will create momentum and keep you engaged and wanting to do more and stay consistent. So that's really cool. And then the intention part is also really good. And you made me actually kind of feel a little bad. I've neglected this in the past several podcasts. When I first started the podcast, I started each podcast with an intention. That was the positioning that I was creating. When I work with clients, I typically start with an intention with them for that session, not just for the whole program, but for each session that I work with them. And it helps to, like you said, direct the course of that session and keeps you motivated. And I can always go back to that intention with them when they start to break down or want to give up. And I failed to do that in this podcast. And so I apologize, everybody listening. I'm going to get back on track on the next one. Thanks, Neely, for reminding me about that. But I think it's a really good practice to get into that intention. And even having an intention for your day before it starts is really important, especially if you're trying to be the best self that you can be, like you are.
And just a note about intention, just because the word intention, I think, is overused, particularly coming from the yoga world. It sounds a little bit like intention, like serious. It's like a little bit out there, like granola-y. I don't know, whatever the word, but and like cheesy, maybe even a little bit. But I think it doesn't have to be complicated. And the idea of intention is really just to loop back to where we started, is to have a plan, is to know where you're going. Not, you know, not the nitty gritty of the plan, but like the why, right? Where, you know, what is this whole thing about? What is the most important thing for me to accomplish in my day? What is the one thing I want to extract from this conversation? How do I want my listeners to feel? Or what, you know, how do I want to make my husband feel today or something? Anyway, so intention doesn't have to be cheesy. It could actually be really practical.
You're amazing, Neely. And this conversation could go on and on and on and on. And I'm so happy that I reconnected with you. We do need to know our why, everybody. And that is really important. And Neely, I'm super grateful to have you here. I'd love to have you back. I know that I've found so much value in just talking to you for these 30. And I'm certain that the audience has as well. And I know that they're going to want more. Where can they find you and how can they stay in touch with you and see what you're up to and see you traveling around the world and cooking and feeling just doing everything, being excited about it?
Thanks.
Can you share with us where we can find you?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So my website is theflexiblechef.com and my Instagram handle is also theflexiblechef. Those are kind of my two main places. If you go to my website, you can check out my YouTube channel. And soon to be announced my upcoming book that comes out in the spring. We just did the photography for it. It's amazing. I'm so excited.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I can't leak the title yet, but it basically is a book about, well, I started because I was hungry for more than just another cookbook that offered 100 recipes and something else that you could Google or somebody else's formula for a good life. And so I give a lot of empowered tools, something I call flexible flips in every recipe. So giving people tons of options. It's sort of like 100 recipes for 1,000 dishes with bits and bobs sprinkled throughout with, you know, practical inspirations, beautiful photography. And yeah, that's it.
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot and I'm going to invite you back on the show once that Will you be willing to come back on?
That would be great. I would absolutely love it, Steve.
Great. Well, we would love to hear more about the book when it's out and ready. And in the meantime, stay in touch with Neely on theflexiblechef.com. And she has all of her social media outlets there. Again, the website is awesome. It's very well laid out. There's fitness, there's lifestyle. Kids showcased on there. I saw something where I saw your kids cooking and behind the scenes and doing a whole bunch of things. So it's really interactive and it's just a really feel good site. And you're a feel good person. I love connecting with you and I'm looking forward to connecting with you once again in the near future. Thanks for your time, Neely. Thank you everybody for listening. Stay healthy and fit.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you for listening, friends. And one more thing before you take off. Would you like to receive a short email from me one time a week on Fridays? 5 to Thrive Fridays is a way for me to keep you expanding your health and fitness with 5 of the coolest things I find interesting or ideas I've been thinking about. Health and fitness books, trends, foods, recipes, supplements, and anything to keep you feeling healthy and fit over the weekend and beyond. Visit stevejordan.com and click on the hashtag #IAmHealthyAndFit to leave your email address. And one more important note. If you found this podcast motivating, inspiring, or educational, please share it with your family and your friends, your coworkers, or anyone you know who needs to improve their health or fitness. Take a screenshot of this podcast and share it on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or any other social media platform. Taking the initiative to share not only helps the people you share it with, but it will help you 10 times because of the law of giving to get. You see, when you give with generosity and without expectation, you'll receive more for doing so. And this holds true when you want to be healthy and fit, my friends. This is just another exercise I prescribe to all of my clients. And those that take it on, they see the most results. So please just take a few more minutes of your time and do it now. Thank you again for listening. And I am healthy and fit.